everybody. Well, this is Dwayne and Raina Britton, and we are doing Passing the Torch, Building a Succession / Transition Plan. And our desire here is to just really cover some key factors for successful transition. Imagine trying to build a house without a blueprint. I think that would pretty be disastrous with all the components, different things going on there. And if you don't have a succession plan, you really don't have a blueprint for the succession and successful progression and succession of the organization or of the ministry. So I've always said that we stand and build on other people's work, other people's shoulders. Because usually we're building on the work that's been done before we come in and we are our part on it, and then we go ahead and we build, someone builds upon ours. And so we all make sure that as we're doing a transition, as we're doing a succession, that we are transitioning and also making sure that the leader's wisdom that led before is there. Also the knowledge of the organization, of the ministry, is also being carried forth, and especially the DNA of the church organization, because we don't want to see that diminished in any way when choosing this next leader. So just a little bit of introduction about us here.
Yes, so we've been through several transitions ourselves, and so people said, well, what are you doing? And so helping people and serving them during their transition, we always encourage the leaders, well, you know, there's a lot of focus on what you're stepping out of, but there's anticipation, joy, and there's something new that you're stepping into. And so our stepping into the new thing in our last transition was for us in this season of life to be mobile equippers. So we're mobile in our RV full time. We're serving where the Lord opens doors, and it's phenomenal where we're finding ourselves. So it's our joy to do that. And so we'll be sharing a little bit of our journey and some of the churches and organizations that we've helped with during, you know, as practical examples. But it's a joy for us to have this ability, this equipping. And then the phenomenal thing is that we get to do it together. You know, sometimes you're in a position of where there is the knowledge of one that's carried by the other. And, you know, in our different roles, you know, you mostly took the lead because you were the lead pastor, and I had my own field of ministry outside the hospital, although I served alongside of him. And in this season of our life, we co-lead, we co-team, and we call ourselves Team Britton. So it's awesome that we get an opportunity to do that. So it's a pleasure to be here with you and to share what we've been through, what we've seen, and God's heart for successful transitions, right? Because churches and businesses are living organizations, right? And God is determined for goodness to come out of them and for their purposes and plans to be fulfilled despite the transitions and the changes that occur along the way. And so we think sometimes about the fact that people will go into a transition with, you know, fear and intrepidation of what it can be like. But really, that's misplaced fear, because God is determined that there is a blessing on the spiritual journey that the church is taking. So, yeah, it's with that excitement and enthusiasm.
As we looked over our, kind of our life, our history, we've looking at about 50 years of ministry. We've done a variety of different things. We planted a church. We also started a nonprofit ministry. We're one of the first long-term missionaries for Dove out. We went to Kenya and we helped plant the church with the Omondis in Nairobi, and we served there for a while, and then we were transitioning out of that into coming back to the States during the time of the shout, the blow the trumpet. When Larry said, you know, we kind of lost our way, and we felt like God was saying, you guys need to come back to the U.S. and help, and so we did, not knowing what that was going to mean. Little do we know that we're the chosen by God to lead Dove Westgate. And we were there for 20 years on staff and led that as senior pastor, senior elder, for 18 of those years. Knew that the Lord spoke to me in 2005 that when I turned 60, which is going to be in 2011, that I would not be leading Dove Westgate. And I've always preached about moving and making sure the next generation leaders are being raised up. And so the Lord said, it's time for you to make sure the next generation leader is being raised up. And so we went through a process with that, And actually, Daryl Hurst is the one who served on my staff, and he became the lead pastor of Dove Westgate. So I thought it was kind of it for pastoring, and about 2 years after that, I got a call from a very dear friend of mine, Larry Kreider, who said they're looking for a lead pastor to kind of just lead a church for just 6 months while they, you know, get a new lead pastor in, and could you help them? And little did he know that actually the church he was asking me to come and help was the first church we actually attended when we moved from California to Pennsylvania. So I actually felt like God was saying, you need to go home and help. And so we end up pastoring Hopewell Overson, which was the original church of the Hopewell Network of Churches. And so we pastored that as the lead pastor for, we thought it was 6 months, ended up being 5.5 years that we were there. But again, the mandate said was the next generation leader. And so we got the call to, we need to raise up the next generation leader and went through a process of that and actually turned that work over to Gary Buck, transitioned that to a young leader. Besides being involved in my own successions and transitions, we've also helped a number of organizations, churches, organizations and family-owned businesses to make succession and to make transitions. So we've been working in both the church realm and also the business realms as well. But the one thing we discovered, whether it's church organizations, that there's a time when leadership must pass from one generation to the next. You just don't want to be the one who's going to be there and just going to die because you didn't turn it over, and the organization dies or the ministry dies because you didn't turn it over to the next generation. And that turnover or that transition can be due to, you know, a retirement, and that's fine. It could be a change in calling, which is fine. There's also unexpected circumstances that happens with individuals. The thing is that transitions are inevitable. So you want to be on the upside of the transition and instead of the downside, reacting to transition. And we have found, since we work with a lot of churches and a lot of nonprofits, is that they are not prepared for transition or succession. And any time an organization or ministry lacks a plan, have a clear plan to navigate the complex process of identifying, developing, and installing new leaders, you're going to have some issues that's going to come forth. And if you don't prepare, the consequences are really high because you don't have that well-defined plan. And what happens is organization struggles, the church struggles, you lose momentum, people get disillusioned, all types of confusion enters in, and there's just this momentum of uncertainty. And we found that ministries may falter, and we found that actually congregations have disbanded because of not a clear plan. And then for us, that church's witness to the community has been compromised. So we just really want to make sure that organizations, or whether it's a business, whether it's a nonprofit, whether it's churches, that we still have a good testimony and that we can see healthy transition taking place. So it means we got to invest time, we got to invest effort, and we got to invest resources into developing a robust succession plan, which has really shows a commitment, long-term commitment, to long-term health of that organization and church and the vitality of that organization and church. And I think that we have to remember is that no organization, no ministry, no nonprofit can be built on the charisma of one individual. And that's what happens many times. We're looking for that charisma person, that one that has that. And when that person, charisma leaves, it's gone because we were built on charisma, and we don't want that to happen. So as we in our handout here, we have some benefits listed of succession planning. And the first one is that implementing a well-crafted succession plan offers a numerous benefits to both churches, and it assures just a smooth transition and promoting the long-term health and stability, which I kind of talked about. Second thing we found out is that it really ensures the continuity of the vision and mission of that church and organization. Because when you have that clear plan in place and you maintain a strategic direction towards that plan, even though the organization can change hands in leadership, because the organization's strategic plan is laid out, that next leader is following that same plan. That is a plan for us. That's where we're heading. So everyone knows where we're heading. It also gives security to the congregation because this is where we're heading. The worst thing you can have is that one leader's in there leading us this way, next one's going to run this way. We're evangelistic church. Oh, no, we're a secret church. No, we're a prophetic church. So every leader can bring in their own flavor, and the people don't know what we are. Well, yeah, I went to a church, and the church said, I didn't even know we're that. Some of the members, you did a little environmental scan. I didn't even know we're that. I didn't even know we're charismatic. We never talked about that. It's just interesting because you have a leader who's kind of went away from the strategic plan, the direction of the church, the DNA of the church, and you kind of lost it. And the people don't even know what they're following. So you got to be careful of that. Another thing that strategic plan will do is provide stability, especially during times of transition. Anytime there's a transition in leadership, there's an unsettling that takes place. Just normal, natural, because most people, if you do the disc, a lot of the congregation is security-minded, they're asses. They don't like change, you know. Entrepreneurs, we love change. Visionaries, we love change. We thrive on change. Majority of people, they don't thrive on change. They want to know, they're coming in, this is what we're doing, I sit in my same seat, I know the same people. We like that stability. So you want to make sure that you have this plan laid out so the congregation will not be unsettled. They know that, hey, they know where they're going. There's a plan there, and we heard about the plan. We know about the plan. We know where we're at on the plan. So that takes away the anxiety, that takes away the uncertainty, and that even takes away the conflict that can enter in when you have a succession, a transition going on. And the one thing I really do like about having this benefits of a succession plan is that it will help you to identify and develop future leaders. Again, transition is going to happen. So who do we have in the bullpen? Who are we developing? Those are the things we need to be continually thinking about. What are the next generation leaders? We're talking about next generation. Well, we got to prepare this next generation of leaders. So what happens is when we have that plan, we know we're going to be transitioning, succeeding somewhere down because transitions are inevitable. We need to develop a deep bench strength. You know, we need to be ready to have people ready to step into key roles because it's not just the leadership, but other key roles are going to be taking place. And so we need to be developing leaders so that those roles can be taken care of. We need to be proactive instead of reactive. And that's what happens many times because we haven't made a plan. Transition happens, and they become reactive. The reason why they called me at Hopewell is because they didn't have a plan for transition. They didn't have a plan for succession. The lead pastor says that he was going to a church down in Washington, and he'll be leaving in a month. So they didn't have a plan. Who didn't talk about that beforehand? You know, those are the things that you need to have on the table to talk about. And again, we'll talk about a little bit of that as we talk about a leader preparing an organization for transition. And so there's some key elements to successful transitioning and succession.
So before we talk about some of the components, there are some principles and some factors that are really important to consider. And we call the first of those the four R's. So it's readiness. And you know what's happening during transition and during change is that there's a change process that's going on. So how do we move people in their thinking from where we are to where we're going? And so understanding that means that you realize it's not transactional, right? But there's a process that takes place. It's a spiritual journey for everyone involved. It's a spiritual journey for the leader who is leaving because he has to be thought, the couple or the individual has to be thoughtful and prayerful about not only how this is taking place, but what happens beyond that. Because if there's not a beyond that, emotionally it's hard to get stuck where you are, right? There's that vacillation that can take place back and forth. So the first R is the readiness of the leader who is departing. So is there clarity that God is directing the change that's coming? Is God directing the timing of that person moving on or going to the next? And if that's not clear, then there's going to be uncertainty on the team. Because if the leader's not clear that God has given clarity about that, then we're still in the decision-making process. And so a prolonged decision about the timing and the what can really be devastational. And so we work with individuals to encourage the leader to be clear about the what is taking place within them. And I love that. Larry, when he formed the transition advisory team for Dove International, the Lord spoke to him and Laverne, and then they prayerfully considered that for a while, even before they made it known, so that it was settled in their heart that this is what God is saying, and we have an endpoint. And that's, we'll talk about the endpoint of the timeline next, but the readiness of the leader is humongous because it's what starts. So we were asked to come along and serve a large church in their succession planning process. And as we sat down and talked to the leadership team and heard some of their history, where they were, we realized that it wasn't clear amongst the leadership couple, the senior leader and his wife, that they were called or what that looked like. So we knew that was the starting point for us, was to spend quality time for them, even before anything else was discussed, because that's what starts all of this off. So the readiness of the leader is huge. Secondary to that is the readiness of the successor. So there's a whole process in terms of who that successor is, how they come to be known as the potential successor, whose decision that it makes as to the, who's going to be the, and it's different for different churches because it starts with structure. So what is your structure and what is your decision-making pathway, right? Who's involved in major decisions? So all those are caveats. But and then the readiness of the successor to step into that role, being familiar with them enough to know what kind of development overlap that there needs to be. Then thirdly, the readiness of the congregation, well, the staff and the congregation. Because if the staff is not ready, then there's not going to be an embracing of the individual that they need to team with to carry forth the purpose of the church, right? You can have a dynamic leader, the right leader, but if the staff is not ready to embrace them for them to become one, then it's not going to be that successful, smooth transition that you're really praying for and hoping for, because it's too premature if they're not ready.
Give me an example of that. Of one of the places where I transitioned at is that when that transition took place and I was coming on, the staff did not know that. And so the first time they met me was when the senior pastor introduced me at a staff meeting, saying, "This is the gentleman who's going to be taking my place." Well, that was an eye-opener, because they they heard of another plan that was going to be taking place on who was going to be covering during this time, and now here's this guy, which we don't know, for the first time, here he is sitting here and saying, "This is going to be your new boss. Welcome." So that was kind of one you want to make sure your staff is ready for.
Yes. And the congregation, the readiness of the congregation for the process to take place and for them to embrace a new leader. If it's not clear to them that there's clarity in the heart of their existing leader, that they're being called on by God and this is God's ordained timing, then that's when presumption starts. Well, what's happening here?
That's really happening.
What's happening that we're not aware of, that this big change is taking place? I came to this church because that leader was here. And their vision is clear, and now someone else is coming. I don't know if my commitment is going to continue. That kind of uncertainty and lack of clarity for the congregation can cause people to second guess. Because when change happens, the first thing people ask, how does this impact me? It's just the first, it's the human nature. How does this impact me, and what does it mean for me? So if we haven't prepared the congregation, then, and there's some tools to do that, then that can also kind of make timing a glitch. And then another big one is the readiness of the finances, because it takes some real planning, strategy, and provision of the Lord for there even to be the overlap that there should be between the departing pastor and the person who's coming on, so that you have adequate finances for that to take place. You don't want to circumvent that overlap and those handoffs and those working together because there was a lack of finances. And then not only that, rarely does it happen with a larger church that there is a change in senior leadership where everybody stays in the same place doing the same thing. It it just does not happen. And so part of the succession planning process is, what does that team look like now? What's on their hearts, and what does it look like going forward? So you can see all of these little sub things that are taking place. But those four R's of readiness are really key to take into account, and even to do an evaluation amongst yourself. Well, what do we think this readiness is? And it's not just a once and done. What's the readiness at any given time in the phases, right? Because the readiness changes.
As we talk about the readiness of, leaders transition, readiness of successor going forth, how do you even identify the successor? That is very crucial to an organization. And this really involves, prayerfully assessing the gifts, assessing the talents, the character of the individuals within your congregation, within your sphere, that may have even be suited for some leadership roles here. And the thing I think we have to be very careful, is that we need to look beyond the surface qualities. Because folks, we put on our Sunday face, we put on our church face, and we have a perception of how we are in church and how we look in the church environment. We need to look beyond that. We need to look at factors like, what is the spiritual maturity of this person? What are the emotional intelligence? That's one thing we don't look at in the church. We don't talk about emotional intelligence. Talk about it a lot in the business world. This person, this manager, emotionally intelligent? Does he know any people skills? We kind of overlook that in the church world because it's just kumbaya. You love Jesus. I love Jesus. So everything's going to be fine. Well, no, they need some emotional intelligence as well. And then is there some alignment with the church's vision and values? And I think they've really covered that well. Don't want a countercultural coming in. Is there alignment with those values going on there? And as a best practices, I think we should always look who we have in the house first. Who are the internal candidates? Do we have that first before looking outside? And as we talk about time, we want to get opportunity to that, is that if we have internal search, that's a different timeline. If you have external search, that's also a different timeline because external takes a little more time, a little more input, a little more things that go on with that. So internal, external. But the thing we always talk about internally, that you have a son of the house being raised up. And it was kind of, and all the, both my transitions at Dove and also at Hopewell, there was a son of a house that took over for me. So the DNA, someone, part of the church, house took over, and that potential kept going.
And if it's not a son of the house, it can be a member of the tribe. Can it not? Right? And that's really powerful because when we first went to Kenya, I had a question mark, Ibrahim and Diane, and they come from different cultures. They're both leading together, but yet there's a synergy of them flowing together so well. How does that happen? And the Lord showed me that Kenya, or a lot of the African countries, are tribal in nature, right? The Mennonites are very tribal in nature. So there is a lot of values that are carried, the respect for the elders, the honoring, all of that they had in common. So it wasn't a son of the house often in the same thing, but it can be a member of the same tribes because the tribes carry the DNA.
Mm-hmm. And so after we have identified a potential leader, then we need to make some investments in their growth, development, through targeted training, some coaching, some hands-on ministry experience, and things like that. And we kind of cover that. We talk about a timeline, developing that next leader and what needs to take place there. And again, whether it's internal or external, there's going to be a whole kind of a different plan, a different train track we're going to be working on. But one thing that we found is very important, and we've seen some really, we've had a lot of great successes. We also had some not so great successes. And we found that the reason why we made those great successes is that the current leader didn't really embrace and support the successor. They supported him in words, but not in actions. Because we always feel that for the successor and the successee, the leader needs to make sure that he is or she is the biggest cheerleader for the one who's coming on. And if that doesn't happen, it really creates issues and problems because they need to express enthusiasm, they need to express confidence. Those are the things very important that the congregation and staff picks up on. Is there buy-in from our leader or this person that's coming in? Is they're excited about it? Are they talking about it? Are they saying, boy, I can't wait for this next season? This church is going to go further than it's ever been. The ministry is going further than it's ever been. Or is it going further than it's ever been? Because we're looking forward also to with that. One of the things.
Go ahead. And in the Dove family, what that means is relationship, right? And you can see that very intentional with Larry and with Merle. So 2 years of travel, 2 years of ministering together, 2 years of meeting together, 2 years of praying together, partnering together, being transparent with each other, relationship is key. And if the relationship between the departing pastor and the successor is not genuine and authentic, people can read into that because they'll say, this is just functional, right? This is for the visual perspective of this, but it goes deeper. So if there can't be a relationship, a genuine, honest relationship that develops at that level, it's not going to go as well as it could, because what are you modeling? And then what does that mean from the head and shoulders on down to the team, right? So that's what it looks like. It looks like relationship.
And using Dove's example, I think that's really great, especially the thing about Westgate. Every senior pastor at Westgate is still a member of Dove Westgate. Larry Crider started, he's still a member there. Lester Eberle, who I took over from, he's still there. Dwayne Britton, he's still there when Daryl Hurst took over. So that is kind of unusual for a church organization to have the previous leaders there. And the reason why, because we hooray on the next leader. Yes, hallelujah, we're excited about the next leader. And we stayed there to also show our support. Yes. That wasn't words. Right. It's also in our deeds as well. Mm-hmm. We are here receiving ministry from that leader who has replaced us.
That's right, because you want them to be more successful than you were, right? Yes. You want them, and it's our responsibility to help them to be successful. Whatever we have to die to, and there's some dying that happens to the person who's departing. You're dying to a whole lot, and it gets painful. But if you're dying for the life of someone else's success and for the success of the organization that you've led, we want to end well. That's what we always ask people. What does a successful transition look like to you? And if you don't have it in mind, what are you shooting for? How will you know when it takes place if you don't have a goal in mind? And you know what one of the goals in mind is? To end well. Every leader needs to end well. End your best. End on your strong suit, right? And that's why we tell people, don't stay too long. You know what I mean? Don't grieve the people, because some people realize in the congregation, well, this is kind of like, okay, how do we gracefully handle this, that it's probably been time, or it might be past time. How does that happen? And if we have a heart to serve well, to die well, and to end well, man, God be glorified in the whole process.
So again, as we look at now the importance of a timeline, we cannot have a timeline unless we have an end date. So we got to work towards that time. You know, when will that individual be stepping away from leadership?
Not pushed out.
Not pushed out.
What are they hearing? What are they sensing?
And it's usually a long timeline. To be most effective, the process should start earlier than later. It should be more broader in scope than commonly thought. We never heard a leader tell us that they wish they started later or closer to the time of the transition. Not one of them. Or they said they regretted thinking or planning broadly. Matter of fact, when we sit down with some organizations we talk to, and they talk about, you know, the transition and we're thinking about, and then they say, well, we need to get a date so we can start our timeline process. And they give us a date, and we say, whoa, that's really short. Because as we go through this process of what it's going to take and the milestones and things like that, we've had individuals say, well, I guess it won't be as soon as we thought it was going to be. And that's okay, but that's reality hitting now.
That's right.
Because you need to have that time. Because to have that timeline, it keeps us focused. It's a necessary, helpful tool. And when you have that date in mind, you back up everything towards that date. That gives us focus. This is the end goal. These are the things that happen to make that goal a reality. So again, it just keeps you on track, clear deadlines, clear benchmarks, and it helps you to really maintain momentum and minimize uncertainty. I look at a timeline as being our North Star. You know, when you're out there, you know, you talk about when you're navigating out in the waters and you don't know where you're at, you kind of get lost in the waters, you look at that North Star, you can begin to figure out where you're at. So that North Star is there, keeps you in alignment, keeps you going in that direction. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 2 says, write the vision, make it plain on tablets. Why? So he may run who reads it. So when we have a timeline, it makes it plain on where we're at, what we're doing. Those who read it know where we're at on a timeline. We have some mile markers there, as you see in that sample timeline that I gave you there. We have you a sample there, but there's a lot of boxes on our timeline. And there's a lot of stuff happening, and we shrink those boxes down as we progress down that thing. But we have things that we need to know, markers we need to make, understanding we need to have. So it'd be check-in points. How are we doing here? Have we done this over here? Those are things important, because if not, we make adjustments then on timeline, but those adjustments are still made with, this is the end date. This is the end date. Everybody's looking at this end date, and we don't want to cause people to falter when those dates keep changing because, well, we didn't get that done, so we're going to move it down, and, oh, we're going to change that down. It just brings disheartenment even to the staff and everything. If we're gearing up for this, it's going to be another half a year now. Oh, it's going to be another year now. Is he ever going to leave? You know, it's just, yeah. It gets in that mindset then. This is just a joke. This is not for real. So you don't want that to happen. And so the next part is really a communication plan.
And with a timeline, you know, you don't want to set people up for failure either, right, with unrealistic expectations. And so that's why a timeline is so healthy, because it's a commonality that's understood by the core team, you know, the elders, whatever your leadership team looks like, whatever your structure is. First, it's known and understood and prayed about and embraced and kicked. You know, you kind of kick it, you toss it, you check it out, you do all those things amongst yourselves before it becomes known to anybody else. And that's so good, because good things happen in that kicking of it, of the date. And then the other thing is that there's usually two timelines, at least two. There's the general timeline of the entire church, right? The entire church is transitioning to that date, right? When the succession planning process is going on with all these factors and things to be accomplished towards that date. But you know what the second timeline is? It's the actual departing person's timeline. Because they have things that they need to do individually, separate from what the church is doing, because they're working on two realms. They're working on their current realm of the transition that's taking place, and then they're talking about their future realm and how they're positioning and getting prepared for that. And there's a lot of practical things, and we are so pleased to be able to help, even in some ways of financially. You know, are you planning to take care of, you know, the departing person? What does that look like for them? How long, how much, what does that look like? And then how do they provide for themselves in the future? So we kind of, in our role in leading and working with the lead elder or the senior pastor, whoever is that person that's departing, we go through a whole series of categories with them so that they feel like they're well prepared, right? That there's no surprises for them as much as you can. And the emotional things, you cannot control. But Holy Spirit knows what they are. And the more real we are with them, the more ministry we receive.
Yeah. And then think about, as you mentioned, finances. One of the things that we talk about is because if a person has been in leadership, that is their finances. What happens when they're not in leadership? So you're actually asking them to step out of something that provided income for them and their families into what? And if they don't have that what figured out, then they're stepping into nothingness. And that's why many times they will not step out, because they don't know what they're stepping into. So that's a reality that people don't talk about, because in the church, we don't talk about finances. That's a kind of no-no. We don't talk about what we're paying our pastor. That's kind of taboo type thing, but that's reality. That's reality, and you got to face those realities as well and talk them through, and you need somebody kind of outside, we'll talk a little bit later, to help those conversations, because it's very... You know, when you're in a family and husband and wife is kind of talking about finances, it can kind of get a little
hot and heated.
Tense.
Because there's usually on each side there's a different perspective of the finances and how they should operate. But if you have a nice financial planner, somebody to come in from the outside to sit down and talk to you about budgeting and help you walk through the category, it's a lot easier to have those conversations with the other person in the room instead of trying to do it yourself.
And if both husband and wife are employed, or I shouldn't say employed, are serving and getting paid for serving, then that's a whole nother caveat. So, you know, the one thing that we want to preface all this with is saying there is no cookbook, there is no recipe, and there's no manual with a 1, 2, 3, 4 step. Because every church, every leadership team, the longevity, the dynamics, the maturity, the development of leaders around you, it all looks different. There's principles and there's processes. And those are the things that can help bring some structure and some clarity. But it's Holy Spirit led and God ordained, right? And so when in walking in the reality of these things and a humility that you're reliant upon God, there's no way he's going to harm his people. There's no way he's going to harm his church. So that's the confidence that we have in walking through these complexities is because God's faithful. He really does. And we've seen so many, many, many positive, successful transitions. And that's when we say that in other areas of the country, they say, what? We've not seen one. You know, we've seen a lot. We can name all the ones that haven't gone well. And that's why someone said, was it Danny Silk, who someone said from the platform, is that they've seen more successful transitions in Lancaster than they've seen anywhere else. And, you know, part of it is that humility and that honoring and that, yeah. So, yeah, and the precedence that's been set, but yeah. So I want to talk about one of the key elements that brings security, safety, and clarity to the whole of the transition succession planning process, and that is the time, that is the communication plan. Because in times of change, people need communication on steroids. They need more and more communication because there's more and more questions. There's more and more uncertainty that's in people's minds. And if people don't have information, do you know what they do? They fill in the gaps with assumptions, what they've known or what they're thinking or what their experience is. And we don't want to leave them to that device, right? We want to inform them, and we want to inform them accurately. So when you think about what a communication plan is, it is a living, breathing strategy where leaders, the core leaders, come together and decide, okay, our senior leader has heard from God. There's clarity about when they're stepping out of this role. So why is that happening? And if the core team is not understanding why it's happening and they can't be on the same page with that, how are you going to answer questions when they're posed to you as why is our senior leader leaving, right? Everybody should have the same clarity about what that is. And so it helps to create a consistent messaging and confidence around those who are going to be asked the questions, right? So if you go through the exercise of a communication plan, it can provide that. It's a framework that you work through, and there's concrete messaging that comes out of it. It's an evolving systematic plan that is initially developed, and then it's revised and enhanced and implemented over time. And I like it because the communication plan says, who are the people that are being affected by the change? Well, that's a simple question, but it's complex when you start to think about it. Because you think through the tiers, the hierarchy, the levels, internally and then externally. So as part of Larry's and DI's or Dove International's succession planning advisory team group meetings or whatever, we start talking about, okay, let's look at this internally. But Dove is global. What external people are being affected by this, right, who have relations, the friends of Dove? You know, the people that Larry speaks into, these other networks, you know, the IAC, the, you know, Apostolic Council, they have people that, so that became very large and very big and very intentional when you think about the scope, right? That's what this plan helps you to do. What kind of scope do we have? Smaller scope, easier to do. Larger scope, larger organization, more complexity. But if the team is working through it together, you're not going to miss it, right? Because Holy Spirit's in the midst, and he loves to answer questions, and he loves to ask questions. So that's what being together can do. So the communication plan ultimately reaches all levels of the organization, and then biggest wise is the congregation, because that's where the mass is, right? That's where the larger numbers of people are. And so they need to know what's taking place at the right time, at the right place, through the right person, and in the right venues, right? And that's what this plan helps you to do. And it also helps people to be real and transparent. One of the things that we encourage people to do, and it's kind of a strategy that works really well, we don't know what everybody in the congregation is thinking or who all the stakeholders, what questions they may have, but we can start a document or an electronic on the website, frequently asked questions, and we can develop the first questions, right, that we may think people need to know or want to know. What is our lead pastor going to do in this next season of life? You know, what's going to happen to missions? Our pastor was mission-minded. How are we knowing that missions is going to continue to be a focus? So you can ask these questions and then answer them yourself. It's there for everybody to see. And people like Q&A because it's a very simplistic format, but very powerful. And it becomes an ongoing kind of a process because now people are free to ask questions. So we invited people, hey, email questions, put questions wherever, and they will be answered by someone from the team. Now people know they're being heard and they're part of the process. Ownership, security, and safety. So Dwayne is going to hand out a sample communication plan, which is one of the tools that we use and have, you know, given to organizations to help them to understand the process and the template of what it might look like. And so I just kind of put together something that looked a little generic, and I'll take, here we go, that looked a little generic, but what's in that first box is the communication plan helps organizations to navigate change. Change is a journey that needs navigation and messaging that goes along with it. So we like to prompt people with saying, what is it? What is taking place? In simplistic terms, we're having a change in our senior leadership because the Lord prompted our senior leader that at the end of 2030, they felt it's time, the grace for them to be in their position is shifting toward another season in their life. Health, right? They see themselves going to this and that. Doesn't have to go into all the details, but it's enough information for people to know. They heard from the Lord. There's clarity on the group. There's something next that they're looking forward to, and they're not going to be left hanging out there because people are protective of their pastor or their senior leader. So why is it important? Why is it important that we're even talking about it? Because we want the organization, we want the church to continue to fulfill its God-given purpose. You can draw in the alignment of the purpose of the organization. So it's not, the transition is not about changing positions or changing seats. It's about what God is doing in the here and now, what he's done, celebrating what God has done in the past, highlighting what he's doing in the future, and then giving people a hope and a vision for the future of what he's going to do. Man, does that not rally people and draw them in? It's not transactional. This is a spiritual journey of what's happening and what God is doing. So why is it taking place now, right? That's important for people to know. And then what's being planned for the future? What are we believing God for in this change? And then what are we asking you to do? That's one of the most important messages for the entire congregation because you're telling us what's happening to the senior leader. You're telling what's happening that we're, you know, you're looking for a successor. You know, God's going to bring that person. We trust that, da, 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 da. People are telling all this. And it's like, okay, I have all this information. Well, now what am I supposed to do with that? Well, we want you to be part of what's taking place here. So first of all, those people who intercede and pray, we're going to ask you to be praying into this because we need your prayers. First of all, we're going to be asking you to encourage people who are part of the process because this is the team. However that team looks like that's part of the search or the selection or whatever, pray for these individuals because they've taken that responsibility on, right? They need your prayers. So now people feel like I know who's doing what and I can take part in it. If you have a word of encouragement, if you have a scripture, if God's given you something, then by all means, please bring it on. So this kind of just goes through. There's a message column. What is the message? The message is going to change from phase to phase, right? Because you're going to be in a different place as the change proceeds. The talking points and the specific content is important, and the core group does this, not an individual, because what do people want to know? And the collective minds know what people want to know more than one person does. So that helps, and then everybody's kind of helps to contribute to the messaging, so now we're all on one page. And then who are the audiences for these messages? And that helps to identify who the stakeholders are, and the stakeholders may progress and change based on what the message at the time is, right? So you start with your levels of hierarchy. And then what methods of communication are we going to use? Sometimes it's printed, sometimes it's verbal, sometimes it's a drama, sometimes or whatever. Who will communicate the message? Who's best to bring this message forward? What time frame should it be communicated? Man, getting the timing is important of when people receive what messaging and who's entrusted to hear before other people do. You want to honor your leaders, right? And then the considerations to keep in mind, and there are some things. So, you know, it just kind of goes on. But anyway, this is just a template for you to kind of think through in terms of the process.
Yeah. We have different ones for, again, obviously organization and whatever group's going to be looking at. So we want to just kind of wrap up here with some wisdom from using outside resources in the process. What happens when you use outside resources? They bring objectivity, fresh set of eyes that comes into it, neutrality within that. We found that we're able, from outside resources, to come in and really ask the hard questions. Because, again, when you've been with the environment, you've been with the folks, it's really hard to ask those hard questions. Someone from outside say, why do you do that? You wouldn't ask that inside. Because at least everybody knows, or we don't want to talk about that. But somebody else can say, "Why do you do that? Why do you do that, or act that way, or why is this important to you guys?"
Yeah, because there's a lot of tribal knowledge. I call it tribal knowledge mm-hmm. when we just know things intuitively because we've been together a long time. It's just the way we do things. We have patterns of behavior and patterns of decision making. But when somebody asks you to explain it, how does this happen so that other people understand it? Oh, that's mm-hmm. a whole new different ball of wax. You know, now we have to think about this ourselves in a way that we can not only explain it to other people, but it can be replicated because you want to pass it on. If it works good, you want the other people who are now going to be involved in the succession now to be able to carry that forward.
And outside resource can also give provide the assessments tools that use a variety of assessment tools. Again, we found it's very important for any potential candidates, whether internal or external, that they all go through the same assessment tools. Because you're measuring objectivity in the same areas. And it's really a benefit even for the internal candidates because they'll know that they were chosen because of their abilities and talents and not because they were just liked or, you know, this is the favorite son. And that's the worst thing you can do because people don't know the confidence. But all the candidates went through this, and this is the one we selected. That's very important to see.
Right seat on the bus. So we've seen, like, say there's four or five different people who are being considered, and then as it goes on, maybe there's two people who are being considered. When you have assessments and you have objective information, you can look at things not through your preference, but you can look at it with additional information. And so what people can see is, oh, maybe I'm not best suited for that lead position, but I'm a strong second seater. So we have seen people actually shift from wanting to be the primary person to being on the team, and it's worked very well. And because both people were honored and going through the process, there's clarity, there's safety, and there's security in that, and it works really well.
Another thing, too, outside can be advocate for all sides because they have no favorites. So whether the successor or the person who's transitioning out or for organization, that person, that outside resource can be objective and be advocates for all sides with that. Especially when you talk about finances, it's a better conversation to have. And also outside person resource can ability to see the bigger picture. They can see the people, they can see the processes, they can see the structure. And again, as Rena talked a little bit about, for the person who transitioned out, it is an emotional, challenging journey for them. Because something they've given their life to, maybe have done 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatever, and now what they're going to do now, it's an emotional change. I've went through it in all my transitions. You know, I think one of my biggest ones was at Westgate when I'd been there, you know, 20 years on staff, and I'm for Daryl. Brace him. He's your pastor now. Our pastor now. Yeah. And they braced him. And nobody called and checked on, hey, how's Dwayne and Raina doing?
Crickets.
It was crickets. No phone calls anymore. Just like, whoa. I mean, I wanted to be able to say, hey, you should talk to Daryl about that and to me. But they talked to Daryl about it like I wanted them to do. But, you know, those emotional things you don't think about and you go through when you make those transitions. So someone from outside can help talk about that.
And I do want to say something about the successor who's coming in, right? It's granted they're not going to be like the person that they're replacing or stepping into their role. And the whole process, if done well, of interviewing, of interactions, of relationship building and assessments, this information, you know, the assessment information belongs to the individual first so that they can understand themselves. And then some of the higher level information belongs to the core team. But what happens is when the person who's coming in knows that they're known to that degree, it takes the pressure off that I don't have to be somebody else. I'm known for who I am, and more of me has come through during the process. So, because you know the pressure, oh my goodness, of stepping into somebody else's shoes, you know, and the enemy likes to work, you know, and that playground of accusation and expectation and fear of, you know, all the things that were mentioned, there's an opportunity for those things to occur for the person who's stepping into the role. So the process itself can be so helpful in the relation building, in the transparency, in the humility of togetherness walking through this. The church should come through healthier after having gone through the process because it's, again, part of the spiritual journey of the church and what God wants to do to take place. So, oh my goodness, there's so much that can be accomplished. So we just push all fear, all apprehension, all anxiety aside because God is determined for the church to be healthy. He's determined and he's for his leaders to be successful. And so you have to really kind of push to your own will for it not to happen that way, right? And who of us wants to enter into that pushing our own will? You might as well do yourself a favor and step aside now because it's not going to end well because it's all God.
Amen. Last closing minutes, any questions here so we, as we wrap up our time?
We're sorry we fire hosed you. There is so much here.
Yeah. Yes.
How was the impact of the all the transition that you went through with your marriage?
Okay.
Oh my goodness. So the question is, how does the impact of transition affect our marriage? It affects it to the point of where each of the individuals has to go through what their identity is. That's a huge one. If I'm known as a pastor's wife, and I'm pastorally natured, I love praying for people and caring for people and connecting with people, but if I'm stepping out of that role, that's part of what my label was and my identity was. So I have to go through a journey of my own because of my role. Then he had to go through his, but now together we have to go through managing our emotions, sharing it with the other person. So it actually caused us to be closer because we leaned in to the other person for them not to be under. I mean, I cried for a while as I sat in the congregation, and I cried because I loved the people so much. And it was lifted my responsibility, and it had shrunk to a point of where my, you know, our small group, which we are part of, I can pastor those people, you know, and do it well and not be stepping on anybody else's toes. So it went from large and huge to smaller. So that was a change. But our marriage has gone through because we try to be emotionally aware and supportive of each other and ask each other the hard questions. And we're like this. So I've told Dwayne at times, and he doesn't mind because he knows it comes from a heart of love and caring. I said, Dwayne, this is one of those situations you need to put your big boy pants on. And he receives it well because he knows I can communicate a lot in such a short way.
And one of the things we've added now in our process, especially working with couples, is that we'll go off for a 24-hour retreat with them, taking it through a process, asking some preloaded questions for them that will be coming and talking about it, because we get them to talk about things they wouldn't have talked about naturally. So because of what we went through, we've made it easier now for couples in those transition spots to talk through things, to actually have a strategic plan for their as life as couple and their families. First year, second year, third year, and we strategic plan it out so they get to talk it through, because if you don't have a plan for your life afterwards, all these other things can enter in. All right, well, if not, thank you so much. We've had a great time with this session, talking about passing the baton, passing the torch. Amen. Bless you.